Welcome to the Personalized Medicine Podcast. This is the place where scientists, clinicians, and entrepreneurs discuss the progress of this rapidly developing field. I am your host, Alexander Yahensky. Let's start. Three, two, one, and we are live. Welcome to episode 17 of the Personalized Medicine Podcast. It is not going to be a regular episode. Today, we celebrate the finale of season one of our podcast. We will not have any new guests today, but instead we'll have the full PMedcast team in the house. We will look back at our journey, remember the most memorable moments together, and discuss what we have learned from our guests and listeners over the last 9 months. First of all, let me say a big thank you to our audience for your wonderful support. Looking back at November last year when this podcast just started, I could not have imagined that it would grow into something as big as it is now. Well, back then, I was 1 year of my grad school with a PhD in molecular neuroscience and finished a very exciting but not particularly successful journey with my biotech startup. And I was honestly trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. And this idea of personalized medicine has always fascinated me as a molecular biologist, because there is so much interest in science showing how different we respond to different diseases on the individual level. And yet, very little of those great research findings are applied in real life to benefit patients. And it was at the conference for clinical mass spectrometry last year when I was talking to my girlfriend about these things. Well, she's also a scientist, and this is how we spent our vacation, attending conferences and talking science. So, anyway, she told me, why don't you start a podcast and invite cool scientists to talk about all of those things and share them with the world? And I said, that sounds like an interesting idea. Why not? I had no idea how to actually organize a podcast, but I just thought, well, as any new good idea, let's not wait for too long and let's not overcomplicate it. Let's start right away. So I just did it. At the very same conference, I approached two speakers whose talks really inspired me and whose stories I wanted the world to hear. These were Professor Kevin Mills and Gordon Lautz. They became the very first guests of our podcast. So then I thought, why to stop at science? If you want to accelerate the implementation of personalized medicine, we need to talk to all stakeholders, to physicians, to patients, to entrepreneurs, to payers, and many more. And this is what we have been trying to do on this podcast, to share the knowledge, to excite the audience and the public about what is possible in personalized medicine, and bring together all of those different stakeholders to accelerate the progress of this very important field. It was a great and exciting start, but it got even better when I have received a message from my good friend Luisa, with whom we are doing a PhD at the very same university in nice small German city of Göttingen.
Yeah, I reached out to you after listening to your very first episode with Professor Mills. I love podcasts as a form of journalism. And at the same time, as a scientist, I was really interested in how the personalized medicine space was developing in so many new and exciting ways beyond research. So we sat down together and we brainstormed a bit about some of the ideas and perspective we had. And without overthinking it, I just joined as a co-host. I really looked forward at that point of time to explore both this art of podcasting and personalized medicine from different angles. And it's been really great so far, interviewing different speakers from around the world and working with this team.
Yeah, that was really exciting. And I really enjoyed working with you, Luisa. But as you remember, the work was piling up. Writing a podcast is not an easy task. And as we were kind of drawing in the pile of of work that we had to do to manage our LinkedIn and Twitter pages, to invite new speakers, record the interviews. We got another message from our fan, from Ivana, who really was a blessing for our podcast.
Hello, my name is Ivana and I'm the content manager of the podcast. For those who don't believe dreams come true, I was a super fan of the podcast and never dreamt of helping out behind the scenes. Now here I am. I manage the episode editing, social media content, and the show notes. I was always interested in medicine and technology advancement. What brings together AI, genome sequencing, cell therapy, and clinicians? Personalized medicine. Together with our team, I have enjoyed exploring topics in medicine and bringing science closer to society.
Yeah, Ivana, it was great that you wrote to me and that you joined the podcast and really help us to bring it to the next level. And since you manage the content on our platform, manage the reach out, maybe you can mention a little bit what we have achieved during those 9 months, to whom we were able to reach out.
Sure. So far, we've had almost 2,000 streams for all of our broadcasting platforms. We had more than 3,400 views on our website. Can you believe it? Our top streamed episode has 299 streamers. That was driven mainly by 200 Twitter friends and 300 LinkedIn friends helping us spread the science. Those golden people come from 31 countries and 66 towns, while our precious guests come from 3 different continents. But we are not stopping here. We are expanding to the rest of the world in the future, right?
Yeah, absolutely. There is no way to stop us there. And thanks for getting so much engagement. And as you said, we have really broad international audience and very international speakers. And frankly, a very international team. All 3 of us come from different countries. And then we were joined by another fellow listener who turned to be the team member. Aradhana, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. I'm Aradhana. I'm the newest member of the team, and I have joined the team as a podcast producer. I moved from being an active listener of the podcast to a member of the team. Through this podcast platform, I'm very interested in presenting developments in personalized medicine to a broader section of the society. I work on different aspects of the podcast production, including the episode content, editing, and post-recording related tasks. It really amuses me to see how data analytics, machine learning, and artificial intelligence are on the path to revolutionize different fields in science, with very important being precision medicine.
Perfect. So I guess, as you can see, we all met online. Apart from Louise and me, none of us knew each other in person before. And I think that also speaks quite a lot about the working from home and remote teams, a topic that is really important now in the challenging times of COVID pandemics. It's been really a great time meeting all of those people for me online and working with them together on the same mission. And I think that really that drive for communicating science, communicating findings in personalized medicine, and bringing that information to our audience, that's something that kept us together and motivated us to work hard on top of our day-to-day jobs to put this content for you. So now let's have a quick look back at season one. And I'm curious, guys, what were the most memorable moments from season one for you? What resonated most?
To me, the most memorable moment is personal and comes from episode 12. There, Dr. O'Neill, who is founder of Fertility Health, taught me that female subjects are excluded from biomedical research. That struck me, because research should be inclusive and reliable. Quite a few times I have noticed that anatomy textbooks usually include white males as representative individuals. just because female biology is different from male one does not mean the latter should be a reference for the human body. 50% of patients are women. Why are they being excluded from research?
Previously, women have not been prioritized when it comes to testing at all because of this. Even animals, we use male animals when it comes to research because they don't have the estrous cycle. So this is, again, I guess why research into women's health is in its infancy, is because women have been excluded in clinical trials and testing for drug development and testing in general. So we are creating the world's largest database of female gynecological pathologies. We are really hoping to replace the why with, well, because, when it comes to all of the different symptoms, all of the different, individual experiences of women through their cycle.
For me, I really enjoyed the episode 15 with Liz O'Day from Oleris, where she talks about the importance of bringing together and working with all the stakeholders in the healthcare and how the biomarkers of response in personalized medicine are doing so. I really think for any technology to work and be successful, a collaborative, wholesome environment focusing on all the aspects is extremely vital.
Healthcare, especially here in the US, is really messed up, right? Where there's all these different stakeholders and they're all incentivized by very different things. And so I think that has led to a lot of, you know, the inefficiencies that we currently experience here. The great news is that biomarkers of response are something that can align all stakeholders, right? So patients want to get better. They want the drugs that will help them. Physicians want to have their patients get better, to deliver the optimal treatments. Payers or insurance companies, they want to pay for and reimburse the treatments and the strategies that are actually going to improve their members' outcomes. And then biopharma wants their drugs to work. Like, everybody that went into becoming a scientist went into it, you know, because they wanted to use their scientific knowledge to make medicines that could sort of help people. And so biomarkers of response are this beautiful thing that actually can help us all sort of work together to have, you know, a better healthcare system and hopefully even just better health in one day. And so actually, like, we feel very fortunate that there is tremendous support from all of these stakeholders for what Oleris is doing. You know, we make it a big part of what we do is to collaborate with physicians because, you know, physicians are constantly inundated with all this cool new sexy tech and, you know, understanding what's real, what's going to be meaningful in their clinical practice is quite honestly very hard. So as Oleris develops our technology, like, we work with clinicians. They are true partners in us in developing our technology. And then, you know, payers and biopharma, like, we are actively engaged with them as well to make sure that, like, you know, they understand how our tech will help them, you know, meet their incentives as well. And so I actually think biomarkers are one of those rare things that can bring people together in a healthcare system.
Yeah, I could not agree more with what Liz said on that episode. And for me, it was just such a fun episode to record. I guess the moment that resonated most with me on this podcast was from our very first episode, where Professor Kevin Mills talked about the importance of transitioning those research findings to real diagnostic tests for precision medicine. And the funny thing then, when we were discussing this, you mentioned that, well, genomics, proteomics, other omics, they are really great, but there is one omics that is very and very important, much more important than all of those other omics fields. So let's have a listen to that.
The first most important omics is, as my good colleague, Professor Nick Fox, always likes to tell me, is the most significant omics, and the only omics that really matters are economics, and particularly in the NHS at the moment in the UK, and it's cost. And it is much cheaper to actually have a panel of lipids or metabolites or targeted proteins that you can perform on a triple quadrupole mass spectrometer than it is to do whole genome sequencing at the moment. And I think, you know, I think the cost of whole genome sequencing is is becoming incredibly cheap at the moment. But then the problem is you have so much data.
Yeah, I agree. That was such a great moment in the very first episode. And I remember listening to that and thinking I had to reach out to you. My favorite moment is actually from the very last episode of the podcast. So kind of coming full circle there. It's from my interview with Dr. Khadija Ferryman on fairness and bias in precision medicine, which is a topic dear to my heart. I think Khadija, at this moment of time, is saying something that's so important. And at the same time, it ties nicely into what it's really like to work in the space at the moment, as things are developing so fast. Being proactive is so important, and one of the reasons this podcast is so interesting to me.
For us, it was really important to be proactive with these kinds of questions rather than reactive. And we felt that even though the story was still being written about precision medicine, that it was important to ask the questions now, that even the act of us asking these kinds of questions to people who are active clinicians, are active researchers, are active software engineers, that even that act of asking the question would potentially prompt them to reflect on their work, on the kinds of questions that they're asking, on the kinds of work that they're working on that could kind of help shift the direction of precision medicine, or sort of make sure that it sort of stays on a path where questions of bias and the potential for discrimination are sort of addressed at the outset.
Yeah, thanks everyone for sharing their favorite moment. Those are really great. And there were so many other great moments that we didn't mention that made us laugh, think, and learn something new about personalized medicine. We now want to take the time to talk a little bit about our episodes, maybe connect some of the topics and ideas that have come up through our interviews in this next section of today's podcast. So to start, maybe Sasha, I'll ask you a question. What would you say are currently the main drivers of personalized medicine that you've seen throughout the first season of our podcast?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think if you look back at those 16 episodes, the three points that stood out for me were, first, the improvement in the technology. There has been so much progress in the ways we can assess personalized health, assess biomarkers, assess human well-being. Second is the data integration, and AI and machine learning play a huge role here. So we've seen that we can generate tons of data. A lot of our speakers confirmed that being it genomics, mass spectrometry, something else, we can produce so much data. And now the challenge is how to integrate that data with the clinical a history of the patient and extract the most meaning out of it. And I guess the third point that stood out for me, I would frame it as opportunities for, these are both opportunities and challenges. And what I would put here is kind of data privacy and ethical considerations and frankly, policy that surrounds personalized medicine. So we still have to go a long way to implement all of those technological and data advances into the real life. And for that, we need to be really cautious of ethical norms and also create the policy that enables us to do it in a sustainable and an efficient way.
Yeah, I think all three points and drivers that you mentioned there are really important and really come up over and over again as we speak to different thought leaders in vastly different fields with vastly different job descriptions and backgrounds. So that's been really interesting. I know that technology is really something that you are passionate about because of your background. And you've interviewed a lot of guests on different technologies. So this might be a hard question, Sasha, but what technological advances excite you the most? and what are you looking forward to following maybe in our second season of the podcast?
Yeah, well, I think there has been so much progress in the last 10 or even 20 years in kind of the techniques that we can use to generate the data, the molecular data that would describe what is the health or disease status of an individual. And you're right, we've talked so much about different technologies on our podcast. We spent a whole lot of time talking about genomics, and that's probably the most obvious and the most applicable right now. We can sequence genomes so much easier, faster, and cheaper than 10 years ago. We can do the whole genome sequencing at less than $1,000 or €1,000 per genome. We can do it pretty fast. That data, they can really be a mirror of patient's health or patient's disease. There are a lot of challenges with analysis of that data, and something that we talked about on episode 2 with Rocio Acuna. But I think there is a great potential there, and this is something that has been already implemented in clinics to a large extent. I think one more important aspect of technology that personally I find super exciting is mass spectrometry in proteomics. This is something that I have been doing during my PhD as well, and some of our first speakers actually came from that field. It was Kevin Mills, Gordon Lautz. I see proteomics as a very, very exciting, very important piece of personalized medicine, precision medicine of the future. It's still quite hard to use it on the routine basis in the labs. It is a more difficult technology per se, kind of the mass spectrometers themselves are quite tricky, but the level of information you get from there is really phenomenal. You not just look at steady genome, kind of the genome with which you are born, but you look at the snapshots of your health state at any specific time. You can just take a drop of blood, analyze the proteome, and detect specific individual protein biomarkers that would tell you that you might have this disease. And I think what Kevin mentioned in the very first episode and the test that they developed to diagnose Fabry disease was really great and really important. That's the test that now been used in Japan, I think, to screen pretty much every newborn to identify whether he or she might have the Fabry disease, and it really changes the life of those people with the disease.
Yeah, what I find so interesting about what you just said is if we think about the dogma of biology moving from DNA to RNA to protein, as you know, both of us have learned studying science, I think it's so interesting that this technology is moving, as you said, from looking at DNA and even RNA in conventional sequencing or RNA sequencing to now looking at the proteome and, you know, what are the proteins doing, which will have a lot of applications. And we kind of intrinsically know that because those are really the machinery that are operating in the cells. But I know that within your podcast, you actually covered a topic that is even one step higher than proteomics. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Sasha? Because I found that really exciting. And there's really a strong scientific community around that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess you are talking about glycobiology right now.
Yeah.
And glycoprotein analysis. Yeah. So that's the field that is growing like super fast right now. And we've talked about glycans on two episodes. Episode number 3 with Gordon Lautz, and then on episode 14 with Dr. Parastu Azadi. And I was really amazed by the response because these are two of our most listened episodes ever. This is kind of like a niche field if you think about it. There are not that many glycobiologists around the world, but the community is just insane. Like how active they are on Twitter. I really admire that. Like hashtag GlycoTime. let me perhaps explain why I think it's the case. So when we talk about biomarkers, yeah, we traditionally think about DNA or proteins. But what many people, what even many scientists do not realize, that many proteins are glycosylated. That means that they have some sort of sugar molecule attached to their surface, and that sugar can be very different in structure and can completely change the function of the protein. So when we talked, for example, with Parastu about coronavirus, the spike protein, kind of the surface protein of coronavirus, is also glycosylated. And kind of that small piece of sugar on the surface of the protein, it can completely change the way virus interacts with human cells. So it can completely change how infectious this virus is, depending on the strain. And also what is very interesting, depending on how the human proteins, like on the cell surface, are glycosylated themselves, the interaction kind of from the human side can also change. And this is something that is really exciting. That's something that we still don't understand, quite frankly. We are just now starting to have the reliable tools that allow us to measure those glycans, those glycosylated proteins. But we are still kind of in the infancy of that field. But I find it super exciting. And I encourage our listeners also to listen to episode 3 again, when Gordon explains how glycans are also a very specific and very precise biomarker of human age. So he developed this glycan age test, essentially looking at glycosylation profile of your own antibodies in the blood, which are also glycoproteins. And by deciphering the structure of those glycans, you can actually tell what is your biological age. Let's say if you exercise a lot and if you eat healthy, but you are, let's say, 60, you can have a biological age of 45. But on contrary, if you are a very young person, but you have a relatively passive lifestyle with rather not so healthy diet, then your glycan age and your biological age will frankly go up. So which makes a lot of sense. And it's really nice. And for me as a biologist to see that you can monitor it on the molecular level. And I hope that tests like that will become routine in the next 5-10 years, just because you'll gather more data to kind of understand what the results mean. And also, I hope that the technology will go even one step further, showing us that, hey, it's not that difficult, it's not that expensive to run those tests anymore.
Yeah, you touch on too many good points for me to pick up now. But I think going back to really technology, you just said that glycobiology is probably still quite far from clinical applications, at least to a patient level where we can use it to really individualize treatment, at least in many regards. What do you think is the technology that is the closest to clinical application, Sasha?
Yeah, I've talked about genomics already, and it's there. Like if you look at some routine testing, for example, for breast cancer, when you check for HER2 positive patients. But something that is just entering clinics, is just entering diagnostics, and is incredibly exciting from all points of view. And this is something that we've discussed with Tim Blaukamp on episode 9. And this is the sequencing of not just genome, but of cell-free DNA. And I think that is a technology that is going to revolutionize our diagnostics of cancer. And what Tim is doing already with his startup with Karyos, it's going to change how we diagnose infectious diseases. I think 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, it was hard to imagine that, first of all, there is sufficient cell-free DNA that is just floating in the blood. And it was really unclear, can we sequence it because it's just so fragmented, so unstable? And B, what does it really mean? Okay, are there just like some random chunks of DNA floating with no meaning? But I guess what Tim and his startup Karyos show that, hey, even if you have a very little concentration of those molecules floating in the blood from bacteria, that can already give you the signal that something is wrong in a specific tissue outside the blood, and then you might have an infection. And this infection can be treated even before you have the symptoms. Or if you have the symptoms, you can identify which specific bacteria it is and which specific antibiotic treatment to use. And this is very powerful because in many infectious diseases, such as sepsis or some acute pneumonias, it's really hard to decide fast on the most effective therapeutic strategy. And a lot of patients, frankly, die because of that. And you would think, okay, infectious diseases, this is not something super hard. We should have been able to solve them a long time ago. And now look, for example, at corona, killing lots of people and being able to diagnose them fast and effectively at the fraction of the cost, that would be very important for the future. And that's something that is happening already right now. So I really encourage our listeners to go back to episode 9 to listen to the story of Team, who explained very well how their technology works, what are kind of the steps that they need to do to move it even further for wide clinical use. And he's just such a positive person, and I think like his outlook on the future of personalized medicine really made me very hopeful that we can make so much more things that we think we can.
Yeah, I totally agree. His episode was absolutely fantastic from a scientific perspective, but then also just learning about the story of it, what it's like to drive new technology to clinical applications. And I mean, he's very successful together with his company. So Sasha, you talked a little bit about, you know, what we didn't think was possible 10 years ago. If you look forward to the next 10 years, what is maybe a topic in technology that you would like to further dig deeper into in season 2 of this podcast?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting question. And on this podcast so far, we've dived deep into the biomarkers, right? So we wanted to understand how we can diagnose patients more efficiently and how can we stratify patients more efficiently to identify the best treatment options for specific individuals. I think what would be really interesting to dive deeper in the season 2 is the upcoming field of gene therapy. So gene therapy was on ups and downs for the last 10 to 20 years, but now it seems to pick up a really big momentum. It is incredibly complex technologically. If you think about how the medicines based on gene therapy have to be prepared, it's super complex, involves a lot of stages, a lot of quality controls. They are very expensive, but with that, we can treat really a lot of diseases, a lot of genetic diseases, but also beyond that. And this is something that I would really like to explore because, again, this is a therapy that is extremely personalized. So it has to be tailored to specific patient. It has to be very much optimized. And it's so complex, like in terms of adverse effects, in terms of how does it work, how it can be delivered, like do we use virus vectors to do this, which type of vectors, for which type of disease, for which type of patient. There are like so many variables. At the same time, it's so exciting because you can essentially, in one step, evaluate the disease completely. So I'm looking forward to discuss this with some exciting guests in the next season.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I think those technologies, as you said, are exploding. And you can also see that just in popular media, as it's getting a lot of attention in newspaper articles and even other podcasts. Something that you mentioned right from the beginning in terms of drivers is that all these new technologies are generating so much data. And all that data is becoming more and more difficult to analyze.
I completely agree. I think we have the data problem in personalized medicine. And this is, again, I think something that pretty much every speaker that we had mentioned on this show. It's one thing to generate the data, but what do you actually do with them and what do they mean? And even in genomics, which is probably the most advanced frontier of the personalized medicine right now, we still don't understand what most of the genes mean, like what most of the individual mutations in those genes mean. Like take BRCA1, for example, probably the most studied gene ever. We still don't understand what individual polymorphisms in that gene actually mean for breast cancer or for health in general. So I completely agree with you on that.
Yeah, and I think part of solving that problem is, of course, generating the data, but then the next is analyzing the data. And that's really, I think, the challenge. And as you said, a lot of speakers talk about, you know, how do we integrate the data? There are all these different forms of new digital health data, which, for example, Khadija Ferryman in episode 16, she nicely points out there's not just the data that we're generating in the hospital, but also, for example, data generated by new wearable technology or even direct-to-consumer health tests like genetic tests that are available now that are totally changing the way people are interacting and also generating data. And I find that particularly interesting, and it has come up in a few episodes. For example, also in the episode when we talked about digital health in Rwanda, when we talk about digital health, there is really a necessity to have data speaking to those digital health. So having electronic health records is so important so that different stakeholders within the healthcare system can use those records, of course, ethically and with the right data protection to help patients and to make new discoveries. And there, we actually had a guest as well, Amani Saini, who was talking about that, there is that need for digital integration, for data integration, for electronic health records, but we need underlying policy and we need political will to put that into practice. And the landscapes that we're operating in are so different. And I think you touch on that also in episode 5 with David Motsashevit, where you talk about digitalization changing healthcare and tying that specifically also to the German system, which is so different, for example, to the UK and to the US. And I think we talk about that several times throughout this podcast. And I found that very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think just integrating all of the data inputs will be crucial. And we can be really fancy and kind of sequence hell out of each sample, do the proteomics, and do whatever other fancy technique we can apply to the sample. But if you can't really integrate the data with, I don't know, some simple measures like blood pressure or EKG parameters or just the pulse, then they lose their validity, they lose their meaning. So we really require that electronic patient records, we really require that integration of the data throughout different inputs, and only then we can really enable the true personalized medicine when we have this complete picture and not just snippets of a puzzle that kind of lay on the different sides of the table.
And I think integrating that will be one of the main challenges. But Sasha, at the same time, we have talked about different tools that are helping scientists work out how this data fits together and how we can integrate all that data.
I agree. Actually, we've talked a lot about machine learning and AI approaches. I think on the episode 2 with Rocio and her startup, Nostos Genomics, we've talked how we can extract most value out of genetic data. Episode 8 with Marina Polakova was also very exciting when we talked about integration of that proteomic data and clinical records to enable personalized treatment of depression. And that was also very revealing for me, also learning about different types of depression, that it's not so simple as we think, also on the symptomatic level. And Luisa, you also done quite some interesting and exciting episodes on AI and ML yourself. Maybe tell me, what were your learnings from those episodes? What actually you think AI and machine learning can do for us to unravel more value from the data that we generate?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question. And I think such a big question that I don't know if I can really answer through our 16 episodes, but it's something I definitely want to explore further. But one of the main learnings that I had, especially around AI, is that AI is only as good as the information we feed in, and also that it has this really human component to it. I think often when scientists and the general public hear about AI, we think about this dystopian future where, you know, machines are doing everything. And I think, to be honest, I didn't have much of experience with AI or machine learning before joining this podcast. And I think my view on that has totally changed, especially around artificial intelligence, that it's such a powerful tool in general. But like all things in science, it depends on how we use it. And there's so much of a human aspect in how we use it. And there's so much validation that needs to happen. And I think we're just in the infancy of scientists trying to figure out how can we use this to our advantage? How can we use this to the advantage of the patients? And then machine learning, we touch on it a little bit in episode 2. But I think it's something that we need to explore further in our next season, because it's a method that will allow scientists to intersect with computer science even more and hopefully drive all that data integration really to the next level. But I think there the story is still being written on how we're going to use all this data integration. How are we going to manage all this data, and what will actually be useful in the clinical practice?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I'm also looking forward to diving deeper on applications of machine learning in personalized medicine in season 2. And Luisa, you actually touched upon a very important topic, and I know that you are very passionate about it, and you've invited a lot of speakers to discuss this. And this is the topic of data privacy and ethical considerations of using data to benefit patients. When you look back at that season 1, what were the biggest points that stood out to you in terms of challenges that we might have in working with the data to benefit patients, but at the same time to protect them from potential misuse?
Yeah, I think there are really 3 main challenges that I think came up in my episodes. But then as a podcast team, we became more aware of them. We would integrate them into other episodes and other interviews we had as well, because we realized that they were good questions, and they were questions that should be asked now instead of when the technology is already in market. And I think those were, as you mentioned, data privacy. We talk about this a lot in other areas of life. And I think when we talk to the public and patients and researchers, it's quite intuitive that we want our health data to stay private. We don't want our health data to be shared with employers, with insurance companies, without our consent. And at the same time, we want to help research. And a lot of people want to help research, but they also want to know how their data is being used. The challenge with that and personalized medicine is that often when we are creating samples in these biobanks, or even when we're creating data, we don't really know how that data is being used. And I think, which was actually my first episode, episode 7, with Rachel on privacy protection in the age of digital medicine, she really touches on that. How do we create data privacy for samples and for data that we don't even know exists, and we don't even know how we're going to use it? And I think that's the main challenge. And it's a big challenge. A lot of people are working on it, but I think it's not insurmountable. And I think with the COVID pandemic, we now see how flexible we really are with all these contact tracing apps. We're seeing that privacy is being considered in many countries, and patients and individuals who are using the platform are engaging with it and are engaging with the public to create something that's good for everyone, that's good for the health of everyone. So I think that really gives me hope. And I think that was one of the really main key takeaways that I also want to take further. And you connected that nicely also in episode 11, where you talked about these companies founded by Dr. Mark Hennell, where he founded companies where you actually were able to sequence your own genome and be in control of that data. So have that genome in your pocket. And that, you know, innovations like that and people thinking like that is really going to drive us forward in that space. Then the second challenge, but I also think, again, it's really an opportunity, is ethical considerations. And we touch on that in a couple of episodes. And I think especially as a researcher myself who worked on animal research, I've been confronted with ethical considerations for a very long time in my own research, in my own work. And I see it always as an opportunity. And I also think in our last episode, in episode 16 with Khadija Fairman, she also sees it as an opportunity to really get ahead of it, to get ahead of these ethical concerns, to think about, you know, what, for example, what are the biases? What are some of the ethical issues that we might face? And how do we, in the very beginning, by design, so we always say privacy by design, but I also think ethics by design can be implemented in personalized medicine. And I think going forward, that will really make this field much stronger, because this field is based on, as you mentioned in the beginning, really individualizing medical care. So if we're able to make that medical care less biased, and that is almost synonymous to me to making it more individual or more personal. So for me, those things are really connected. And there's really, to me, there's an opportunity there and not just a challenge. And then the last aspect is this policy and legislation around personalized medicine. And I've talked about that a little bit with my guests, but also you talked about that with your guests in different spaces. How do we implement policy to ensure that personalized medicine is possible, to ensure that health records are being kept? And policy is always around stakeholder management and communicating with the public and getting everyone on board. And I think as scientists, often we forget that. We forget that, you know, and really in order to make, we can have the best diagnostic tool in the world that is even economically feasible, as per our guest in our first episode. But if the public doesn't accept it, and if there is not the policy behind creating an environment where that is possible for healthcare professionals to pay for, to use, to educate, then that technology will fail. And so I think, again, that's a challenge, but also an opportunity to really think about and make personalized medicine more applicable and bring it to more patients.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think we need to look at those challenges always as opportunities. And as you said, there is just so much space also for great innovation and also great startups that we've seen and that we had to chance to talk about on our podcast. So I'm also curious, Lisa, what is your take on entrepreneurship in the personalized medicine space? Like what you've learned about founders or what you learned from founders we have spoken to on this podcast, and where do you see the future of entrepreneurship in personalized medicine, maybe a little bit more broadly in biotech?
Yeah, that's so, I mean, that question coming from you is so interesting as well, because you're actually the one that has the startup experience. I've always been fascinated with startups. Personally, I think they're actually quite similar to research in many ways, in the exploratory kind of way, but then they're so different in other aspects. And what I found so interesting talking to guests and hearing also from your guests and those interviews is what it's really like to found a company and how It's such an individualized experience as well. And seeing scientists take that step out of research into entrepreneurship and how they've managed that. Because a lot of our speakers have done that while still being involved in research, even sometimes science communication. Here I'm thinking, for example, of Dr. Helen O'Neill, who is a very active lecturer, but at the same time, she just founded this startup and is very passionate about both things. And at the same time, she just became a mother. So I sometimes wonder, you know, how does she juggle all of that? I'm also kind of cheering for her to succeed on all of those fronts. I wanted to highlight one more episode, which was episode 4, where you interviewed Christian Ebb, who was starting a company on patient recruitment into clinical trials. And that is so important for personalized medicine. And I think he's taking, as you just said, a challenge and turning that into an opportunity within that startup. And hearing about his experiences, I thought was so inspiring. And I really hope that the clinical trial space can change and patient recruitment can be more representative and also easier.
Yeah, and actually speaking of Christian, for me, he's a great example of somebody who's coming outside of healthcare. So he's just an economist, seeing the problem in the healthcare and solving it. And this is also something that is very, very important, that we do not only kind of restrict personalized medicine to healthcare professionals, scientists. Sometimes people from outside can have much better ideas just because they have a very fresh view on the things and they are not burdened by this curse of knowledge or the curse of status quo. They just say, hey, like, why can't we do it? Let's do it. And they go for it. And that's really exciting. And I think also speaking about female entrepreneurs, that for me, it always amazes me the tenacity and sometimes the challenges that they have to face. You mentioned Helen starting a company, having a baby. Also, Marina Polyakova, mother of three in the foreign country, starting her own company. To me, it's insane. I admire this deeply. Like kind of the challenges that they face just to do that are very hard. And we spoke about this a little bit also with Liz O'Day, who's an entrepreneur herself. She started her own company. Very successful company, Olaris, in Boston, but still she had a lot of challenges in that journey. And she tries to advise young biotech entrepreneurs also how to avoid those, how to make life easier. And maybe from personal experience, I can say that's hard. Like starting your own company is always hard, apart from finding money, funding, securing funding for your startup and actually doing the scientific work or any other organizational work. You need to strongly believe in what you are doing and you need to wake up with this idea that, hey, like what I'm doing is important. It's going to change the world. It's not easy. Most of the people won't believe it, but I'm confident and this will work. And I think this is what Liz O'Day summarized very nicely on episode 14. And I encourage, on episode 15. And I encourage everybody to listen to it because it's such a story of inspiration also coming from her personal experience.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think she, as you said, she's such a, I think being a mentor is always really challenging, but you can really also tell in your interview that it's such a fun interview to listen to. She ties in some really interesting non-scientific points that make her really like a really approachable speaker. One thing that I thought was really interesting that you just pointed out about Christian Ebb was that he's someone that came from outside of science and he's an economist. And I think that leads us to one of the opportunities of execution that we haven't touched on, which is the different stakeholders. So of course he's an entrepreneur coming from outside with fresh eyes. Another one of those that we had in our kind of in our thought leaders was Amani Saini in episode 13, who also does not have a scientific background, but due to a personal story from her sister being a patient of adverse drug reactions, got involved in policy. And I always find those stories to be really interesting, how someone is personally inspired to get involved in personalized medicine. And often what I find is Amani very clearly talked about all these different stakeholders, and I think was very good at engaging all these different stakeholders, which makes her and Adverse Drug Reaction Canada so successful. So, Sasha, you've also talked to all these different stakeholders in personalized medicine. What struck you there?
Yeah, I think that was pretty much the reason why I started this podcast, right? So my feeling is that the stakeholders still don't understand each other that well. And this is something that we have been seeing. It unfortunately sometimes still happens. If you read the news also, kind of how personalized medicine is always pitted against a kind of more generalized approach now, also specifically in the time of COVID. I think not everybody yet understands the benefit of personalized medicine. So if you look at it from let's say, from the patient's perspective, right? You can get the treatment that is tailored to you. You will be diagnosed much faster, and you will receive the medicines that will not cause massive adverse effects, but would actually specifically heal your disease. And that's something that is great. And I think we need to, we can't just rest and not tell it to patients. We need to really scream about it to everybody that general population understands that this is a massive upgrade to our healthcare system if we can truly enable it. And I'm really happy that Aradhana joins our podcast with that mission. Now, in terms of physicians, I think we've spoken to Stefan Wagol on episode 6, and he's one of the leading immuno-oncologists in Germany. And he was saying that even for medical community, it's really hard to bring some of those innovations into clinical practice, A, because there are so many different regulations in place, which is a good thing because, yes, like therapies should be safe, they should be tested, but B, doctors are not necessarily incentivized to use the most cutting-edge technologies just because it's a matter of getting used to or the matter of cost, honestly. And we really need to push for that doctor education and kind of showing clinicians that this is something that can really revolutionize medicine, revolutionize their practice, and save a lot of lives. And most of them do understand it, don't get me wrong. It's just that we need to make it easier, this transition of scientific research, scientific advances into clinical practice, and engage with clinicians, engage with patients as early as possible. And I guess the third aspect in this whole stakeholder discussion is how do we pay for all of it? If you look at genomics, proteomics, these are still pretty expensive things to do, right? So we need to make sure that we really transition from this omics to economics, as Kevin mentioned in the very first episode. So we need to make those tests affordable. And I'm sure we can do it. Yeah. If you look at a lot of those techniques, like the cost already went down dramatically over the last 10 years. We just need to put them in the most efficient way in the labs, in the hospitals, teach nurses, teach doctors how to use them, how to apply those technologies, and we can really use them at scale in the next 10 years. I believe that. And when we can show that, then I think the rest of the stakeholders, such as payers, or as we call them, insurers in Europe, will also dig into that, because frankly, healthcare system can save a lot of money if we can diagnose diseases early, if we can treat them better. Doesn't matter that the therapy is a little bit more expensive. Like, if it's efficient, we save money, we save lives. And I think in this way, we can bring all the stakeholders to the same table.
Yeah, so stakeholders, I think, is a great ending point for our discussion today, because it really emulates both our listeners, our speakers, as well as our target audience. And season one for me has really been an exploration of this entire personalized medicine space, for myself, but then also for our listeners. And I think it's been really great talking to you about these three drivers: technology, data integration, and then the opportunities for execution today, Sasha.
Yeah, Luisa, I absolutely agree. This was a great discussion, and really looking back at season one, there are so many interesting topics that we've discovered for ourselves for the first time, I think. And I'm looking forward to exploring more topics on season two. And guys, before we wrap up today, I actually want to ask you all the question that we typically address to our guests on every episode. And that is, what do you expect to happen in the field of personalized medicine in the next 10 years? What would you like to see come true?
For me, I would like to see better accuracy in diagnostics. For example, for disease prevention, if we have better diagnostic tests, for example, working on molecular level, we can detect disease before it even spreads. Or we could use those tests also to replace needs for invasive treatments.
For me, data integration and inclusion of artificial intelligence and machine learning tools would be something to watch out for in the field of personalized medicine. How these things will be incorporated even in a more efficient way in the field.
If I would have to pick one thing and now kind of answering my own question, I would say scale. It's really important that we could upscale the testing that we can do already today for the personalized medicine, for the precision medicine, that genomics, proteomics, glycomics will come into routine diagnostic labs, and we can leverage that massive data sets for the benefit of human health.
For me, it's clinical applications. There are so many cool startups transitioning from research into the clinical space around the world, and watching that will be super exciting.
Well, dear listeners, we are now officially concluding season one. We will take a break, and we will be back with new episodes in a couple of months. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, on Facebook. We are posting regularly news about personalized medicine, and we'll also share with you some summer snippets that we prepared specially for you. For season two, we would really like to make our podcast more personalized, and that means that we want to interact with you, with our audience, even more. So right now we have one very direct call to action. Please go to our Twitter or LinkedIn page where you will find the poll, and please let us know what are the topics that you would like us to make a deep dive in the season two. Also, feel free to leave comments with the names of guests you would like us to invite on our podcast, and please feel free to share any feedback with us on social media. We are looking forward to it. So let's stay in touch. We wish you a great rest of the summer. We will be back in fall, and you will hear us again soon. All the best, and until next time.